So hi, I'm really glad to be here. Really, really glad to be here. So I think this is my way-seeking talk, right? I was supposed to tell you guys how I got... Oh, Mike. Mike, please.
Might be a little tricky. I got it. I think I got it. I'm going to... Ron says the middle is good. Oh. I didn't want to put it over the mandolin, unless when I take the mandolin off. So, wow. Where to start? There's a whole lot to start with. First, I guess I just want to acknowledge all of my teachers. And all of my teachers' teachers. And all of my ancestors. And everyone that supported me to get me here. I feel as though I have been the recipient of many, 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 many people's bodhisattva vows, and for which I'm very grateful. So I think the reason, you know, okay, so the very first time I set foot in clouds and water was for a 12-step in Buddhism retreat probably 9 years ago. And I even talked my husband Tom into coming. Another friend of mine came. You know, we loaded up the car, you know, came and... And it was, you know, it was when it was downtown on Prince Street and by the Black Dog. And I don't even really think I stayed for very much of it. I don't even know how long I could sit, but I sat as much as I could. I cry. I'm a weeper. But I loved it. And I remember I stepped out of the Black Dog Cafe and I sort of like, I don't know, like Lower Town hit me and I was like, God, I love this place. And, I mean, that was like 9 years ago when I'm thinking 4 hours away. That's a really long way. I wanted to do that, whatever. So, went home, went back to life, blah, 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 blah. So, I'll back up a little bit. I've been, for the last 18 years, I've been teaching yoga. And before that, you know, probably right when I got sober, so 1982, I started meditating in a yogic way, you know, kind of a yogic path. A friend of mine's like, you know, I call my higher power Baba. So I'm like, what's that? And I thought we were going to like stretch out, you know, and be doing, you know, hatha yoga. No, we were like, you know, sat and chanted. And I was like, this is awesome. However, another reason I'm here is because, you know, in 2012, I had breast cancer. And, you know, I got done with that, and yay, I'm really grateful I, you know, didn't die from it. But I thought, you know, I don't want to be an angry old woman. I just don't want to be an angry old woman. You know, and Tom and I, we played cribbage, or we did play cribbage on a cribbage league, and, you know, I got to see some people that were, like, getting up there, and I got to see people that were, like, really awesome, super bright, brilliant, you know, got to be, like, I don't know, 85, 90 years old. And there's some people that are just, like, you know, that I don't think their mouth ever changes. And I was like... So there's some people like are really inspirational and some people are really inspirational like, I don't want to be like that. I'm afraid I'm heading that way. So what happened after I had the breast cancer was I realized I was still so angry. You know, I've been doing mantras for years. I've been meditating for years. I'm like, something is wrong. Something is wrong with this picture. So there was a Buddhist group. And also I always thought the other thing when I came for the 12-7 Buddhism retreat, I thought, oh, like I need to become a Buddhist, like another thing. Like I need to do one more thing to try to fix myself, right? So I'm like, oh no, it's okay. So, but I started sitting with these guys because I said, do you think it will help? You know, nobody gets up at 6 o'clock in the morning because everything's going great in their life. So I started, right? So I went and I started sitting with them. It was actually 6:30, I think, on Saturdays. And about that time too, Brad Warner came to visit Milwaukee, and so a whole we all, you know, went down there in mass to the Milwaukee Zen Center and met him and saw him and all of that, and it was cool. And I'm going to say this out loud. I thought he was a terrible speaker, but I really, really liked his books, and they got me sitting really regularly. And so it was just like, sit every morning, every night, every morning. I'm like, okay, I can, okay, I'll do that. I'll sit every morning, every night. And I was staring at the wall, which, you know, like you stare at the wall and like, have you guys done that? Like, you know, it starts to like, it gets really weird after a while, you know, and you start to see faces and, you know, that happens in session sometimes too, you know, and I'll just, oh, like, I was talking in my session. One of the teachers was like, oh, so you're hallucinating. I'm like, yes, I think I'm hallucinating. Oh, well, that happens sometimes. So the point is not to make a big deal about it. But then, so I started sitting really regularly. And then after some time, maybe 9 months or so, I realized that this particular group that I was sitting with wasn't really such a good fit. So then I'm like, man, who am I going to sit with? Because by this point, I knew that A, I absolutely had to do this practice. And B, I absolutely could not do it by myself. And I had been trying to kind of do it by myself. Okay. I'm in trouble. So, you know, I go to Milwaukee. You know, at that point, you know, Tonin was retiring. I didn't even know if the Sangha was going to keep going, blah, blah, blah. You know, I go here, I go there. I'm like, hey. And then, like, one day I'm meeting a friend of mine for lunch. It was Thai food at Mai's. I know this is really important. It was a Tuesday. I don't know what day it was. Tom says that. It's a Tuesday. Anyway, so I'm thinking, Clouds and Waters Zen Center, Clouds and Waters Zen Center. I can call them. So I look it up on my phone. You know, I punch the number. I call the number. Ring, ring, ring. Sosen answers the phone. Clouds and Waters Zen Center. I'm like, oh, my God. La, 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 la. She's like, well, that happened. What am I going to do? You know, I'm like, well, we had something like that happen here about 8 years ago. And, you know, anyway, so then, and then I'm like, and I want to do that thing, you know, where you take formal vows or something, you know, I don't even know what you call it, that thing, I want to do that thing. Oh, yes, we have a Jukai classic coming, you know, starting in September. I didn't know that hardly anybody ever answers the phone, and B, I didn't know that you don't have Jukai class, like, every year, so I just, like, slid right into this, the groove of, like, amazing, like, synchronicity and awesomeness. So I'm coming to sew my okesa, and I get up early in the morning. I was staying at Rachel's house. Is she here? Anyway, and so stay at her house, and she told me how to get there and climb up the back, and you know, it's kind of creepy at, you know, early in the morning. You know, caught in the back, said, and then we started after the sitting. By the way, I do highly recommend the morning sit. I mean, it really is awesome. It's like a little mini session. You know, you sit, walk, sit, and do some awesome chanting. So that's what I'm fixing to tell you about. And I'm going to do a cool variation of it because I really love it. And so when I heard the repentance vow, I was like, oh, my God, I have to be here. I just have to be here. So this is my variation of it. All my ancient twisted karma. All my ancient twisted karma from beginningless greed, hate, and delusion. All my ancient twisted karma from beginningless greed, hate, and delusion. All my ancient twisted karma from beginningless greed, hate, and delusion. I now fully give up. I now fully give up. I now fully give up. I take refuge in Buddha. I take refuge in Dharma. I took refuge in Sangha. And that's what keeps me here. And it's crazy. You know, like, why would you make, like, such crazy vows? Like, okay, so every time, almost every time, how much time do I have? Till 10:15. So almost every time, like, okay, so this friend of mine, my friend Jim Bowker, okay, so let me go back. So I don't know where I'm going to study here, but then we're like, who am I going to sit with in Appleton? So, so this friend of mine, we're checking out different places to sit. Once we figured it, we couldn't sit there. And so there's this, we're sitting around talking about how we're going to sit and do you feel safe and blah, blah, blah. And so this guy just says, I come from the Soto Zen tradition. And in there, like, you don't move unless your leg falls off. So Jesse and I get out in the car. And I go, I want to do that. And he's like, me too. Or maybe he said it. I don't know. One of us said it. So we're just like, okay, we're going to start a Soto Zen sitting group. Like, we don't know anything. So this friend of ours, Jim Bowker, who's the other guy that started the group, he's been sitting, thank you, Jim, for like 30 years in this tradition. He lives near Green Bay. He lives near us, you know, where we used to live. He's like, I'd like to get in on that. So we started it. We started it, and we came up with a... we're like, and so we came up with all, you know, our all little thing. We're like, well, somebody made it up to begin with, which we know, like, what things are we gonna, pick? Like, we did the Metta Sutta and just all kinds. And he had been, by the way, working in like prisons forever, so I mean, he knew what to do. But then after I took Jukai, that was in November, and shortly thereafter, I knew that. I really wanted to ordain. I came really close. Well, how close? Pretty close. I was a Unitarian for the last, 20 years, something like that. And I came really close to going seminary to be a UU minister. And I thought, they just don't go quite deep enough. You know, they just, I love them. I love my Unit. I love my Unitarian friends, Unitarian UU friends. They're awesome. They do amazing, amazing, amazing work in the community. And they're like the people that live their faith more than, many, many, many other people I know. But I just was like, it just doesn't quite go deep enough. And I didn't really even, I just knew that. So when I came here, and so I knew I wanted to ordain. And so I asked and went through this whole process, 5,000 questions, like, why do you want to do this? And so, I don't know what I thought. So someone was going to say, but she's like, well, I don't see anything here that's really a red flag. I want her to say, well, we think you're awesome because you've been a lay minister at the UU for 20 years and you've been sober a really long time and you've done all that work on yourself. We think you'd be a fabulous candidate, but no. It's like, we don't see any red flags. Okay. I mean, nothing. I mean, and I'm actually really glad. And the same thing happened when my friend Jim is like, when I got my name, Shojin. It means continuous practice, devotion. And I go, because I'm thinking, well, what? And he's like, that's a great name for you. And I'm thinking, oh, he's going to say something really cool about me. Why do you think that? And he goes, because it's impossible to do. And I'm just like, ah! Just like the Bodhisattva vows. So, you know, I started coming every month for Sesshin, and I feel like, I mean, from the beginning with the sitting, but even more so being in Sesshin, as I have felt like with this practice that I have been able to get traction is not quite the word, but maybe not be at the mercy of my past. I feel as though I had quite a bit of early loss, and you know, I had a family that was just messed up enough that knew I needed relief from suffering. And you know, and now I know, like, everybody suffers. People get it early or they get it late, but everybody suffers. And I'm grateful that I know that now. And it's not just suffering. The reason that I'm here now is because the practice I did before when I was sitting in a different tradition, for me, was similar to the way that I... similar to the way that I used other substances to try to escape. So I would do these awesome mantras. I mean, I learned some long mantras, and they sound awesome. And we'd be like, we'd go to these retreats, and I'd be like, I feel great. I'm stoned. And just be like, isn't it great? Yeah, it's great. You know, but then I would go home, you know, and be a jerk. You know, or I'd be home and be really mean to the person that worked for me. I had a really moment of awareness when Tom and I had just started living together. I set up this whole little meditation room in the other room, and I'd been sitting, and I felt like I was flying in the universe and just feeling great and it's wonderful. And I come out in the hall, and he says something to me, and I snapped at him right away. And I thought, something's wrong here. Like, it's not right. Like, this isn't right. You know, when it goes back to that, I really don't want to be an angry old woman. You know, I really want the way that I am, the way that I really show up in the world with really, you know, the people in my family, the people that I meet on the street, the people that are my friends, that it's consistent. That who I am on the inside is the same as who I am on the outside. And it doesn't mean I'm not going to screw up. I'm going to screw up a lot. I have to tell you, when Leonard's not here, so he said he'd be Jisha. He's like, I got to tell you, I watch you, and like, it makes it okay. Like, I know with the way that you practice, it's okay to mess up. So that's probably the way you're going to see me, is you're probably going to see me mess up a lot. But I promise I'm going to keep trying. I've been watching. I've been trying to figure out how to bow and stuff. Oh, my God. So, you know, I was writing. So I said, you know, like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to bow without falling down. You know, because you got to keep your knees together and just do it right. And I'm just like. And she said, we'll catch you. We'll catch you. So that's really, you know, that's my experience of the Sangha so far. And I'm incredibly grateful at how welcoming y'all have been. And there have been, like, thing after thing after thing after thing. I'm incredibly grateful to Tom, my husband. I mean, he was just like a force to be reckoned with. Like, when we're like, we're moving, he's like, all right, let's go. And we were here, and like, it was, I think it was like from the day we decided to move, it was like 63 days, and we were like in an apartment in Lower Town. Wow. And our house like was on the market for 9 days. You know, we closed, you know, this month. So I feel like I'm really supposed to be here. I feel like I'm really supposed to be here. And I feel like the stuff that I'm learning, I mean, I hope that someday I'll be able to kind of grasp some of those really weird things that y'all talk about, like emptiness. Like, I don't know about emptiness. I'm like, what? You know, I mean, I remember way back, like, I don't know, in the 80s, I tried to read some Buddhist stuff, and it was just like, wah, 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 wah. Didn't make any sense to me. And it just did it. And and now I realize it doesn't have to. I'm so grateful. It does not have to. And we were talking about what to talk about today. I mentioned I'm scared a lot. And so someone goes, that might be a good thing to mention in your talk. I'm like, but I am scared a lot. I mean, some of it is that I'm in a new place. There's a lot of stuff I don't know. I mean, I get lost a lot. There's a lot of stuff. There's so much stuff here I don't know. People are nice enough to, like, really just kind of let you mess up, and then they tell you, maybe they don't. That's why I really like that, too. It's like, sometimes I can mess up for quite a while, you know, and then, like, is she going to get it? Maybe she's going to get it. I think she's going to get it. Maybe she'll get it. Nah, okay, I got to tell her. You know, like, I mean, but they give you a chance to sort of clue in on your own. I like that. So I've been reading some stuff by Katagiri Roshi, and side of the book, You Have to Say Something. I'm good, thanks. And he talks about how I'll be thinking, you'll be thinking, this is really great Zazen. This is really great. No, this is really horrible, Azazen. Like, just whether you think it's horrible or whether you think it's great, like, just keep doing it. Like, just keep aiming for it. And one day you will get top of the head Zazen. Like, one day you'll get it. Like, one day you'll reach it. So that's kind of where I just figure it's one of those things where I don't think it's a once and done. I don't think it's a once and done. I don't think it's like, now I have it and I'll have it forevermore. I think it's sort of like, I'm more aware now than I was before. I want to sing something else for y'all, especially in light of the ongoing tragedies in the world. This was the first song that I wrote on the mandolin. I started playing the mandolin about 11 years ago. And I started playing the mandolin because I could put it on the back of my motorcycle. Not kidding. Because my idea was going to travel around to yoga studios and sing. I did a little bit of that. But this is called How Does Love? And it's just about, I don't know how this mystery works, or this compassion works, but it just keeps showing up in my life. How does love make a way through the darkness? I don't know. How does love make a way through the darkness? How does love make a way through the darkness? Just count me as one who is grateful. Just count me as one who is grateful. How does hope stay alive In the presence of a war, I don't know. How does hope stay alive when the bombs are exploding? How does hope stay alive in the presence of a war? Just count me as one who is grateful. Just count me as one who How do you and I find a way to heal our broken hearts? I don't know. How do you and I find a way to heal our broken lives? How do you and I find a way to heal our broken hearts? Just count me as one who is grateful. Just count me as one who is grateful. Count me as one who is grateful. That's sort of the thing. This is a place where I find a deeper place to connect. It helps me make sense of stuff that doesn't make sense. And sometimes we just say, this doesn't make sense, does it? Together. So I think the last song I'm going to do is, it's my most recent one. I wrote it after coming back from the loving kindness session. It's called Place of Peace. All my life, I've been wanting. All my life, I've been hoping. All my life, I've been searching to find my home. A place full of warmth. Place full of love, a place full of peace. I've looked far and wide, almost lost my mind. till I came to see this place that I've been wanting is inside of me. A place of all I want, a place of all I love, a place of all I for you, my wish for me, my wish for you, my wish for me, my wish for you, my wish for me, is that we can build a place of peace. Is that together we can make a place of peace, a place full of warmth, a place full of love, a place full of we have plenty of time for questions. Okay, I'll do one more. So, this is actually, I want to leave, we can kind of make this, you don't have to make it, but it's, be kind of fun to, so I wrote this also after I came back from the Loving Kindness retreat, because I did this talk on Loving Kindness at the UU there, and I didn't want to be like, oh, I know everything about loving kindness. I'm so great. So this is it's really easy to sing along with if you feel like it. So it's called A Wish I Knew. I wish I knew a little bit more about love. I wish I knew a little bit more about love. Oh, yeah, I wish I knew a little bit more about love. And I wouldn't have to yell at my husband. I wish I knew a little bit more about peace. Oh, yeah, I wish I knew a little bit more about peace. Yeah, I wish I knew a little bit more about peace. Then I wouldn't have to eat this last piece of cake. I wish I had a little more love and kindness. Oh, yeah, I wish I had a little bit of love and kindness. Oh, yeah, I wish I had a little more love and kindness. Then maybe I could finally love myself. I wish for the world a little bit more love and kindness. My wish for the world a little more love and kindness. Oh, my wish for the world a little more love and kindness. Then maybe we can all live in peace. Let's do that one more time. My wish for the world a little more love and kindness. Yeah, my wish for the world, a little more love and kindness. Yeah, my wish for the world, a little more love and kindness. Then maybe we can all live in peace. Thank you.
Plenty of time for questions.
Plenty of time for questions. Or you can get out of class early. Yes, ma'am.
I just want to say it took every cell in my body to not stand up and applaud after your first song. That was amazing.
Thanks.
And your whole talk just brought such, my heart just feels so full. So thank you so much. And I also want to add that I kind of relate to the liking the those pseudo zens. We don't sit in muscle. At a yoga class, and they're like playing music and talking. And she's like, and how people meditate anymore is they can just lie down in the
Nuh-uh. Yes, ma'am.
Your talk reminded me of a writing class, and it says, "Don't write, don't use words. Show." And you say that very well. You make a great novel.
A lot of short stories.
I'd love to hear you talk a little more about. I love your talk, and I really related to the, I don't want to be a mean old woman.
Ah.
I don't want to be a mean old man.
Mm.
And about what tools have you found for yourself to try to bring more of that consistency? I can really relate to the also, I've meditated, I feel so good. And then you step away from it and you just suddenly turn into a completely different personality. Wait a minute. How am I going to put this all into alignment? So I wonder if you have any...
Well, okay, so this is the short answer to that is when I sit every morning and every night, my life works better. Now, what the Soto Zen teaching is that I don't sit every morning and every night to get something. But when I sit every morning and every night, I am able to, like, have some restraint. And I think part of the thing of, like, so the not moving thing. You know, I don't want to do damage to myself, but part of not moving when I'm in Zazen or when I'm sitting up here in front of y'all is about teaching myself restraint so that when something happens that I don't like, that's painful, like somebody says something mean or something happens I don't like or I don't think is right, that I don't go to my bam, I don't do my first thing. Usually the first thought is wrong. Usually the first thought that I come to when I'm reactive is not the way that I want to show up in the world. So that's the first part of it. I know the other theoretical stuff, but it's not really like I know that the theoretical answer to that is when I can show mercy on myself, if I can be compassionate toward myself, then I can be more merciful and more compassionate and more loving to you when you do something I don't like. But I'm not really there yet. I mean, I know that I think eventually that I will get there, but I'm not quite there yet. Did that help? Yeah. Yes, ma'am. I'm a little bit deaf. I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Okay. I come from a long line of a family that has a lot of alcoholism in it. And, you know, you express some of that in your history as well. And I'm not meaning this to be accusatory at all, but I'm just wondering, how do you feel that this isn't another of a series of, you know, something that feeds that compulsion to,
oh,
to,
so
to, you know, be all in on something.
Oh, right,
serves
right.
You for the moment.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that compulsive,
right.
All-consumingness that
right.
Alcoholism or smoking,
uh-huh.
Other addictive gambling behaviors,
uh-huh.
Consume.
So I think what I hear you asking is how is my connection with SodaZen just not another addiction or another compulsion?
Yeah.
You know, it could be. I don't know for sure that it's not. But the thing that's different with something I'm obsessed with than this is that whatever it is that I'm addicted to takes me away from my life. So it's not life-giving. So whatever it is that if I'm addicted to something, it usually causes me to not be able to show up in my life. For you know, like, I'll give an example. Like, this is really an embarrassing example, and I'm going to tell you. So a while back, like in the 2000-something, 2003 maybe, I was supposed to do a baby dedication for a friend of mine at the UU. And I had written a song and everything. I was completely obsessed with Mini Coopers. I was on the computer Googling Mini Coopers. They called, tried to get me. I totally missed that. I was really obsessed with that. That'd be an example of an addiction or obsession. When I show up here, it allows me, when I go home, when I'm hanging out with Tom, my husband, I feel like I'm able to be more loving. I feel like I'm able to be more present. I feel like I'm able to be less self-centered. So that's the difference for me. That was a good question, by the way. Yes, ma'am.
Courage to just be.
Thanks. I thought of another answer to your question about what has been helpful. So, I believe it was a Rahatsu session, and so I was sitting there, and it was really uncomfortable. And, you know, in Rahatsu, they're talking about how the Buddha, you know, touched the earth and called on the earth to help him. And so, you know, usually what happens when I go deep when I go deep like that, I have to, like, you know, like, I've given it, like, I've tried as hard as I can try. You know, and I got no more try in there. And so then I felt like when I called on, you know, like internally, like the inner Buddha, I felt like it helped me see that when I really, really, really want, when the reactive thing was to be angry or hurt or mostly angry, kind of tap into some sort of hatred, that I had a choice to choose compassion. And I said, no, I'm not going to go with a hatred, that I'm going to choose compassion, and I'm going to call on everything good to help me with that. And I feel like as I call on everything good to help me with that, that I get it. I get that help. I think it's all I got. Was there one more? I thought somebody said no.